Thanks for listening to Outcast World. You lock your front door, don't you? You wouldn't go out and leave the front door open. Well, that's essentially what you're doing when you're not using a VPN. Right now, your data is being tracked, stored, and sold by loads of people. For a lot of people that are listening to this show, that is not just annoying, it can also be very risky. NordVPN fixes it. It's fast, it's reliable, it's number one for consumers, and it takes less time to set up than ordering a takeaway. Outcast World listeners can get NordVPN for under £3 a month. That is up to 75% off. Just go to outcastworld.net. The link's at the top. Turn it on. Forget about it. Make yourself safer online with the number one NordVPN for under £3 a month at outcastworld.net. Hello, it's Graham Smith. Welcome to Outcast World. Today on this podcast, someone whose work's been really shaking things up recently, the author and broadcaster Daniel Harding. Now, you'll know him from the best-selling book Letters to My Younger Queer Self, which has been everywhere. It's been all over the TV and press. And now he's literally taking it to the streets. He's asking, is it time that we finally ditch the dating apps? Let's get into it.
Dating apps have become a breeding ground for the worst of human behaviours. People have gone rogue. It's feral.
It's 2025. There are no flying cars and dating is still as confusing as it's always been. Is it time to once and for all ditch the dating app?
I think there's arguments for both. You know, there's positive because you can like explore different aspects of relationships, whether that's like physical, emotional.
What's your chat up line? I think you use your dog.
I think dating apps are kind of useless.
Chatting about for 2 or 3 weeks, you know anything about them, don't you? You know what I mean? It's when you meet up, what's there to talk about?
I think it's beneficial. Being in bars and meeting people can be very frustrating because, you know, most people are drunk or on other things.
Because you're in a relationship?
Yeah.
Okay.
A few.
Oh, a few. Polyamorous. Okay.
Kind of in a sixsome.
I love that. Do you think that apps perhaps make us too judgmental?
It's almost ingrained in us, specifically more so I'd say for like gay men. I'm only looking for X or I'm only looking for Y, and sometimes like you just haven't had a good other experience with someone else.
Do we ditch the apps once for all?
I think so. I think that apps have had their day.
I'm going to be keeping the apps for the next while.
So if anyone wants to date Hugh, because he is available.
Thanks for rubbing it in. Yeah.
There's no choice, girl. They're here to stay. That's it. There's no choice. It's not even a question.
Daniel joins me from France. Very posh.
Bonjour.
Bonjour. I have a friend I speak to in France nearly every week, and he always starts every conversation with, oh, bonjour, ça va? And I always feel like I'm doing my GCSEs again.
Oh, my French is terrible. Honestly, like walking through the streets of this really cute town, and I just, I'm struggling, but it's beautiful. It's very beautiful.
Do
I can't
you speak
say
French?
Word.
Did you do French in school?
No. I did German, actually. I was in the German camp, yeah. So I did, I was learning German, and I got a B, actually, GCSE.
Oh,
wow.
Very good. Very good. I did French, not German, and I got the B, and I've forgotten all of
yeah.
it. So I'm imagining where you are now. I bet there's a little pool outside. Is there even the countryside somewhere gorgeous?
Oh, it's so gorgeous. It's on the top of a sort of a hill in this tiny town, and we've got like this, would you call it a chateau? I'm going to call it a chateau anyway.
We'll say chateau. Yeah. I love that.
We'll say it. And it has got a pool. It's with friends and their kids. So it's interesting.
Okay, oh, I love it. It's interesting. I mean, I love it when my friends come up with the kids and stuff. I do love that. But then there's a bit where you're like, this is why I don't have kids.
it's a constant reminder.
So your book, Letters to My Younger Queer Self, it's really struck a chord. Like you've written books before. You had a book out last year and you came on and we talked about it. But the reaction to this has been huge. It's through HarperCollins, isn't it?
Yes.
So you've been on loads of TV shows and all that. I saw you with Judge Rinder on Channel 5.
Oh, he's lovely, isn't he, Judge Rinder?
Yes.
Rob. Yeah, to be fair, it's not that I didn't expect it. It's that I'm just very thankful with the reaction. It's done exactly what I hoped it to do in the sense that it's reached lots of people. It's apparently really gone down really well in America, which really surprised me, actually, with all the book bans. And I think with the current climate out there as well and people wanting to sort of access this literature, it's just perfect. But I'm overwhelmed and I'm really happy, and it's done exactly. And it's helping people, which is really lovely. And this is a collection of obviously letters from different people. Mm-hmm. So it's not just my success, it's like everyone's, and I'm really proud of the book and I'm proud of everyone's letters. So it's blown me away, really.
You even did Letters Hour on Virgin Radio Pride the other week, didn't you? You had a few legends sat there with you. How was that?
Oh, it's so much fun being in the studio. I mean, obviously, this is a daily thing for you, but for me, it was interesting just being behind the mic and getting, getting on with the show. It was fun. It was really fun. And I had Ella Morgan on and Cyril Ibrahim, who are both in the book. And it was really fun to chat to them. They read out the letter and they spoke on the power of obviously writing to your younger self. And it was really fun. We played some tunes. And yeah, it was really good. Really, really fun.
I could see producer Felix in the background through the glass on the videos. He was the class behind the glass, pushing the buttons. Yeah, it looked really good. What's the one reaction from one of your readers that's really kind of stayed with you? I'm sure there's been a huge reaction.
Do you know what it is? The people that reach out on social media and say, this has really resonated with me. This has been incredible to read. Sort of, I passed it on. But it's actually the people who aren't queer who have reached out to me and said, I had one person who's in a school, a teacher, who has implemented it into their library because they thought it was really important for the kids. And then another parent, a mum, who thinks that her son is queer but doesn't know yet. And she got the book to understand a little bit maybe of what they're going through. And I found that just to be really lovely that this is obviously reaching out to so many different people and helping, hopefully, different people understand. Because that's what the book is to walk in other people's shoes or get a slice of what it's like to, because obviously you can't understand everything, but to get like that sort of insight into it is really important. And it's been lovely. The feedback has been really, really great.
I wish I'd been a book like that when I was a teenager coming out. Like, those sort of things really do help, especially the idea that it's someone older than you speaking to you as a queer youth to kind of understand your life, isn't it? So just, yeah, I love it. I love the success that I've seen from it. So tell us, you've been out on the streets in a nice way, asking people if we should if we should ditch the apps. I've seen the videos. What has that been like?
Graham, first of all, can I just say your voice is like catnip. I feel like you should read my next book. I think I'm gonna ask you. I'm sitting here and I'm listening to you. I think I'm gonna ask you to read my next audiobook.
Please do. I'd be happy to do my first audiobook. Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm signing you up. Yes, I hit the streets to determine whether once and for all we should ditch the dating apps, because I know that you're with a partner yourself. Well, you're married now, actually, aren't you?
Yeah, we're married, yeah.
But dating and using apps is frustrating and time-consuming and actually really quite detrimental to people's mental health. So we hit the streets to find out if we should ditch the apps and if they're actually a good or bad thing. And I kind of went into it thinking that people would be very much like, yeah, no, we kind of need them though. But actually, the majority of people that we sort of spoke to seem to agree that it is time to perhaps ease off of the apps, maybe, not
really
ditch them completely. Yeah.
That's really interesting.
It is. It's really interesting because I think a lot of people are frustrated with them. I think there's a barrier. I think there's this swipe culture where people are swiping or, you know, going on to the next thing. They're not investing in one person. They're not taking the time to know people. It caused a flurry of debate. What do you think? What do you think? Do you think we should ditch them?
I think they've got their place. But do you remember last year when you were on Virgin Radio Pride and you can listen back to it on the Pridecast, and I think it's on Outcast UK from last year, when you talked about Grindr at 15, it's kind of come of age, and there's a whole generation's grown up with it. But what I found last time I went on the app, because you know what it's like, when you've got your husband, even if they're sat next to you, you have a look at what's going on Grindr.
Oh, yeah.
It's never anything really.
It's nosy, isn't it? I've even been on it in this French village.
Oh, and was there many people there? Because there should be loads of people around me. And when you see, like, there's like three people maybe locally, and then beyond that, you're not allowed to talk to anyone. So I think what happened with them is they've become such a money-making opportunity. Do you remember years ago you'd speak to anyone? Now, it's all locked down unless you pay the cash. So how is it in the French village, by the way? Is anyone online? Anyone nice?
I am actually the only gay in the village. I'm definitely.
Oh, no.
I am. But there's not many people. Let's be honest. Yeah, I know what you mean, though. I feel like it is. Unfortunately, they are monetizing it because people need it. And that was one of the other things that came out. A lot of people said that, you know, in this day and age, it's hard to sort of strike up that courage and go up to someone and talk to them. Mm-hmm. And so where else do you meet people? Because with queer places closing as well, where do we meet someone romantically? And it's really hard sometimes. So the apps do facilitate this sort of like, you know, branching that communication. I think the thing that takes it a little bit too far is a lot of people were saying that people hide behind these screens and they almost live a life out behind the screen.
Yeah, they're different in real life to what they are online. Like they're living a completely different life online. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and you've obviously got catfishes, you've got different things, but also you've got like the psychological side of it and the mental health side, which people were saying it can be really damaging, you know, to your confidence and stuff. Is that one thing getting rejected in public if you go up to someone, but it's another thing to keep on getting rejected or judged
time and time again
by a picture.
Yeah, totally. And we've also got the kind of, the apps have facilitated a whole new world, haven't they? You know, I think people may in the past may have cruised a bit or gone to some of them kind of venues, but now they'll go online. And what you get now is people saying, I want this list of things. And also there's the proliferation of kind of like chemsex and hard drugs and stuff on some of the apps in some places. You know, you don't have to go to many British cities before you'll see some sort of indication that people are looking for drugs as well. And I think that's something that no one really saw coming in the beginning, but there's a perfect storm around chemsex and apps, isn't there, that's created this whole sort of Pandora's box.
Absolutely, it's a pick a mix. You can go on to these apps, and also the apps are all the same. You know, Grindr is just a different app to Tinder, to Hinge, but they're all the same people, perhaps different ways of speaking and stuff. And it's really a pick a mix of what you want. And like you say, I mean, chemsex is huge right now. There's a huge sort of, I guess you could call it a crisis out there about it. And you can really go on there and find basically anything, which can be quite dangerous, I would say, as well.
Hugely dangerous. You've had people kind of, you know, do had the Stephen Port case as well, didn't you, in London all that time ago. And I think what people don't realise is that where you have a sort of chemsex epidemic, not just to kind of just focus on that, but also you also have at the same time a loneliness epidemic, a mental health epidemic. And these things exist alongside each other, and the apps are kind of becoming at times a place where a lot of that is playing out in ways that we didn't imagine. But without the apps, how are queer people going to find like love, sex and community? What are we going to do? We're going to have to start talking to each other again.
You're going to have to stop going up to people and asking for the number. I actually did that. I went up to someone in a tossed salad bar and asked for their number, because I'm sure he was flirting with me. And I gave my number actually on a piece of paper, never called, never messaged, never went to that tossed again. But the thing is, I think we're starting to be a little bit braver maybe when it comes to this, because like you say, I think that people can be quite cruel online. Do you know what I absolutely hate? I hate when I see on social media people sharing people's profiles and laughing at them, or like saying
vile,
like
vile,
it's just so horrible. Like, why are we doing that? Why are we like, sometimes, I would snigger at someone's profile, maybe. I would never in my life share that socially with anyone, because everyone is different. Do you know what I mean? And that's such a horrible attack of a character.
Yeah, completely. Like, I see that. I used to find it funny sometimes. I think some of them are set up, aren't they? Them chat windows, and they just share the chat window. And I think I can understand that, like, some of them are funny and you'd accept it in that way. But then you've got other people that are kind of like just being mean, just sharing things about people in their local area that you would never say to their face, would you? You would not do that to someone's face.
That's the thing. And this is the thing that I always say with things like that. That sort of like, because I agree, like, I've laughed at like things I've seen online, whether they're true or false, I'm not sure. But that is the type of stuff that's for group chat, maybe. Like, it's a couple of chats with your friend. Yeah. And do not put that and make it public. It's so hard to put yourself out there. And to obviously, that's one thing to do on the phone, let alone do it in real life. But I think that's how people can be really cruel on the apps. And I think that's the thing. So it's pushing people to perhaps ditch them and go outside and be a bit braver. I think there's something so attractive with someone going up to you and being like, oh, can I buy you a drink? Or how are you today? Yeah. Or just like actually just saying hello with not intention.
And some people, like, there's always that thing to remember that, like, some people, you're going to find them more attractive in person than you would on a picture that they
maybe had
to take awkwardly for an app. So many people just kind of hate having their picture taken, and to move it out of that space, I think people might find it more liberating. Where can people see some of this work? Because you've made a few short videos about it, haven't you? And you're working on this as a project generally.
Yeah, I mean, so this one is going out on social, and the lovely Outcast. I'm not sure if you've heard of it, but it's a very, it's a brilliant.
Wherever you get your podcasts, guys. Wherever you get your podcasts, yes.
So it should be on social. But yeah, but we are doing more documentaries on the topic of dating. So watch this space. But it's an interesting one because I think it's such a for something that we've done for so long, it still seems so foreign. And I think that how we date continues to evolve and how we sort of respond to that evolves too. And I think that people are just wanting to go back to basics. And that's what I'm finding. Yeah. I'm finding that people want to, you know, learn a little bit, have a little bit of mystery, not know height, weight, penis size. Oh, I might say penis.
But it's so reductive, isn't it? It's so reductive if that's all anyone's about. Like, we've had that available for so long now that I almost don't find it attractive. Like, yes, you could say exactly anything to me now and I'm like, oh, great. I think what nothing people really want... Nothing does, does it? And the thing that people are really after now is, I think, just authentic connection, to feel like one-on-one connection with someone. And that's what a lot of these things are kind of spilling out from, isn't it? It's like people want to just be around other people and to feel valued. And these apps are kind of slicing a bit of a profit out of that. And I think that can only go in one direction. I mean, look at what happened with social media. Initially, it was the town square. And then before you know it, we've all been force-fed whatever on an algorithm and our heads are in a completely different space. So I wonder what direction we're going to move in with this. I wanted to ask, so you've been... I've seen you so much, by the way, since on the telly and everything and everywhere, since the book first came out and you had the launch in May.
Thank you.
What's been, for you, around the recent book... what has been the most surreal moment that you've had so far around all of that?
I think it's just people sort of like, I actually did Edinburgh Book Fringe, which was really great. And it was just like to go to somewhere like that. And I didn't know what, you know, I don't know what my audience is there. And I went to this reading and I did this moment where I sat down and literally no one was in the seats in front of me, not one person. And I thought, oh gosh, right, okay, so this, no one's interested, like literally no one's interested.
Those events can be like that though, that's the thing. It just depends what time you're speaking, and then later on loads of people turn up.
It was like a 1 p.m. and I thought, oh gosh, no one's going to turn up. And then all of a sudden the organizers said, oh, a couple of people are coming in, and nice. it filled up. It was lovely, and there were quite a few spare seats and stuff. And then all of a sudden the event person said, we got over 30 people tuned in online. And all of a sudden this barrage of people came, and I got asked loads of questions, and loads of people were interested, and people wanted me to sign, and it was beautiful and wonderful.
That's
and
cute.
Those moments catch me because I never take anything for granted. I'm very grateful for everyone who sort of would listen to the book, buy the book or whatever. But it's important that obviously the messages are out there, and when moments like that happen and people come back to me and say, you know, this is really important, and it reminds me that it is really important, I think those moments just like I'll never forget them, and I'll never stop being amazed by them.
When you think about it, yeah, that is in our lives and our heads, we have it. We're so conditioned. I did Outcast, the London Podcast Festival, and next door was Jamila Jamil, and she had a full sold out, like thousands of people were there. But we were next door, and we only had a small audience. And then in the end, there was a few dozen people turned up that paid a few quid to come and see it. And I sat there and I thought, well, Jamila Jamil's got like 3,000 people next door. I've got 25 people here who've come in and they sat down to watch us record the podcast. And I thought, I'm so happy that 25 people have come in here and they're engaged.
That's
enough
amazing.
To really want to sit and have fun, isn't it? And it does mean a lot when you see people, when you go to them things. And I think people have really connected with the book in a way that, that's taken everyone by surprise. It is, without a doubt, Daniel, the queer book of the summer.
Oh, I love you. Thank you.
Perhaps the year so far. No, the impact has been absolutely huge. So, do you know, fair play to you. Congrats. I know you were working on it last year, and it's really nice to see that pay off. It's really nice to see someone come through and it just make a real impact and do everything you wanted, because that's kind of like, yeah, that's amazing stuff. Where can people get it, by the way, if they've not got their copy yet?
You can get it on all bookstores or online. Obviously, I always urge people to support local, especially queer bookstores if you can. But it's available everywhere on audiobook and Kindle and hardback. So, yeah. And I also will be doing, there'll be an event actually later in the year, date TBC, maybe in October, which is a Letters Live event where people are going to do live readings. So, yeah, watch this space. Okay.
Look forward to that. And if you want to see a bit more of Daniel investigating what is going on and if it's time to ditch the apps, check out This Is Outcast World on TikTok and on Instagram, and we'll stick it on there. Daniel, nice to chat. Speak to you soon, mate.
Thank you so much. Pleasure.
That was Daniel Harding. Honestly, some food for thought about how we connect as queer people today. Going to shift gears now, big time. Full on handbrake turn coming in. Summer has been. Summer is still here. We can still squeeze a little bit of late summer out, can't we? So the music doesn't have to go yet, and a relatively new anthem just dropped from a trio who are serving harmonies, humour and a Desperate Housewives inspired music video. It is Remember Monday, and they are the girl band that represented us quite successfully, well, more successfully than it has been done for a while, at Eurovision this year, and I've got them for a proper catch up. We love a proper summer anthem, and these three best mates went from sixth form to Eurovision, to all the festivals this summer, and now they're back with Happier. Please welcome Charlotte Steele, Holly Ann Hull, and Lauren Byrne, better known as Remember Monday.
Hello!
Hi!
How are you?
We're doing good, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very good, very good. So we're loving the tune at the moment, Happier. It's like, it's big breakup energy, it's big camp energy.
Do you know what? We wrote it when we were writing for Eurovision, and it was just kind of one of the, 40-50 songs that we wrote when we were writing for Eurovision, but it just, for some reason, it just, we kept waking up singing it, and we were like, it's not right for Eurovision, but we couldn't wait to release it. It was one of the first things we did when Eurovision was over, was get back in the studio and finish it, because we just wanted everyone to hear it as soon as possible.
So songs about kind of like heartbreak and defiance always really seem to hit hardest in queer spaces. So why do you think LGBTQ plus fans have connected so sort of strongly with you and your music?
Oh, that's really a big honour, by the way. I think we just hope that we're relatable, to be honest. Like the stories that we tell are
real.
Everyone has, yeah, they're genuine, they're real, they're our words and they're our experiences, and I assume the majority of the world has also been through similar or has some way of relating to it in one way or another. And yeah, we just want everyone to be able to come together and listen to our music and be like, oh, they seem like our type of gals.
Yeah.
And we've always really wanted to make, with our music and with our live shows and everything like that, I would say the majority of our friendship group are in the queer community. So, our kind of humor and so much of our lives as people is influenced by the LGBTQ community. So we feel like they create a safe space for us, and we just want to do the same for them with our music and our shows and everything.
I love that. You did Eurovision just a bit earlier this summer. It feels like ages ago. It was only earlier this summer, wasn't it? It's like the gay Olympics, that, isn't it? What was that kind of ride? Ride like for you, that whole experience?
It's the best thing we've ever done in our lives, which just doesn't, doesn't even describe it as it should be. There's no way to talk about it that really lets people understand how much fun we had. It was the best thing we've ever done. We would do it again every year if they let us, which I don't know that they will.
But the UK normally comes bottom in Eurovision. That's been the tradition for a long, long time. But you kind of really rescued our reputation this year. You really didn't. Like the judges. I feel like you did. I feel like didn't the judges vote you like 10th out of loads and loads of countries? Looks like they voted you 10th. You moved us from, we weren't on the bottom, we were all the way up the list off the back of it. How did you manage to do that? What was the secret, and can you pass it on to whoever's next?
That was actually the best feeling in the entire world. We've pretended that it ended there, and nothing else happened after that moment. We worked really hard, but we genuinely just had the best time. And that's the one thing that we really love hearing people say about kind of watching it from afar and watching our experience from afar, is that it looked like we just had the time of our lives, and we genuinely wanted to be there, and we genuinely loved it. And I think maybe that read. And
that came across,
Yeah, we've been mates for a really long time. We've been singing for a really long time. We've got that connection and that blend, and maybe they saw and heard that. I don't know.
So being friends must have really helped you as kind of like a collective and kind of getting stuff done. I mean, I guess you can be more kind of not rude, but kind of abrupt with your friends, can't you? You can be like, this isn't working. You can be more authentic, I guess.
Oh, yeah. God. We literally say all the time, we don't know how people do this career as a solo artist.
No.
It's there's so much pressure, and it's silly because, you know, we're not saving lives here, but it is a really high pressure job and environment, and, you know, having people to lean on, and like people that can see the worst of you and still love you is such a relief. Because you have to be switched on a lot of the time. So having a safe space in each other is a real relief.
Yeah, it means you can be your best, I guess, doesn't it? Because if you're surrounded by people you don't like, well, I think it's really hard to do your best, isn't it? You're about to hit your biggest UK tour.
We are about to go on a 17-date tour around the country from in October and November.
Yeah.
And we're coming to London, which I assume is maybe where your listeners are from.
Listeners are all over the UK. So we've got some in London, we've got a load in Scotland, we've got people listening on smart speakers everywhere. So you're hitting like...
Hello!
Oh, look at us! What's this?
New dates unlocked.
Yeah, just like the whole of the UK. Belfast, Manchester, you've got dates all over, haven't you?
Oh my gosh. Well, yeah, we're going everywhere. All of those places you just mentioned, we're going to. And we really hope that everyone buys a ticket.
What do you want people to feel when they walk out of one of your when people walk out of one of your shows, what do you want them to feel? What do you want them to kind of come away with when they've seen you live?
We always say we love it if people feel like they want to be part of the gang, or that being at our show made them feel like they were a part of the gang. It's honestly, our shows are so silly. We don't take ourselves seriously at all, I don't think. So
no,
that kind of comes across, and we really interact with everyone, and
each show's different.
It's just pure.
So you might as
chaos.
Well come to them all.
Yeah.
Every single one. Well,
otherwise you're actually missing out.
So Happier is out now, isn't it?
Yes. Happier is out.
And the video, is that coming out soon or is it out now?
The video is out, it's on the tube. The YouTube.
It's on the tube.
So it's on the tube, like the old school TV back in the day, like the 80s. The tour kicks off in October as well. Charlotte, Holly-Ann, Lauren, Remember Monday, you've been amazing.
Thank you.
Before I go, I need to tell you who's coming up next time. We've got an exclusive chat with one of the stars, I won't say who, but you might be able to guess, of I Kissed a Boy. He's opening up about living with HIV, mental health, and the reality of going public with it all. It's raw, it's important, and it's one you are not going to miss. See you next week. Stay with me. This is incredibly simple. If you've ever used Grindr, Googled something rather personal, or posted anything political, your data is already being tracked and sold. Think about that. A VPN can make you a lot safer. NordVPN takes about 2 minutes to set up, one click to turn on, and it just runs in the background. There's no effort after that. It's consistently voted number one across a load of metrics for consumers. It's fast, it's secure, and there's no drop-offs. Outcast World listeners can get up to 75% off NordVPN right now, which brings it down to under £3 a month. Go to outcastworld.net, top of the page, tap the link, then you're done. Outcastworld.net for up to 75% off NordVPN.